Hi, everyone. Welcome to Choices, and thank you for making great choices and listening to Choices. I'm your host, Christine Choi. Please remember to subscribe on iTunes so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to rate and review because that'll help me out a ton. You can find Choices on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere else you can find podcasts. And just to let you know, this was my first in-person interview, so please enjoy. Today, I talk with Elijah Guo, actor, writer, producer, and teacher. I hope you enjoy this interview.
Hi.
Hi, Elijah. So Elijah and I met recently in improv class, our level two. Funny story about how small the world is. Elijah is actually from my town, basically.
Yeah, Palo Alto.
Palo Alto. And I'm from San Jose, but I lived in Redwood City for a few years. So literally next door, his first girlfriend.
My first girlfriend.
Went to my high school. Very, very small world, everybody. So remember, be nice to anybody and everybody you meet because you never know how they're connected.
It's a good philosophy.
Yes. And Elijah, tell us what you do, what you're doing out in New York.
So I'm an actor and writer. That's what I'm doing here in the city. I do a lot of teaching and coaching. It's my day job. But that's what I'm here to do, acting and writing and a little bit of music. So a bunch of performance.
Awesome.
Arts, other arts.
What can we find you on?
Yeah, let's see. You can find me on a couple of shows and a few movies. The main show right now is High Maintenance on HBO.
Oh, awesome.
I'm in episode 3 of both seasons on HBO.
Awesome.
Which is pretty exciting. Biggest movie, I would say Patriots Day with Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, cool.
I don't play a very good person.
Ooh.
I assist in the obstruction of evidence.
Oh, jeez.
So, not a good person in that.
Elijah's first intro in improv class was, I play villains on TV, so.
Remember, yeah, that was my intro.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get started here. Okay, so we're going to do a couple opening games, just so people get to know you a little. What would you do is the first game we're going to play, and I just thought this was funny because you work with kids sometimes.
Oh, okay.
The question is, you're babysitting for a friend, and the kid asks you, where do babies come from? What would you do?
That's a good question. Did we say how old this kid was?
Let's say, like, 7.
7, okay. That's an imaginative age. I mean, I think they could outsmart me in a lot of things. So I wouldn't lie to them.
Oh.
I would phrase it in a way where there might be multiple interpretations. I personally would tell them if two people like each other very much and want to start a family together, then they can bring a baby into the world. Oh. I would start vague.
Okay.
Depending on how persistent the kid is.
True,
I'll give
true.
The balls in their court to make it more graphic.
You think you'll go all the way if the kid just keeps picking at it?
You know what? I would. I believe in truth and education. When I was 13 and we had sex ed, I wish I had known that kind of stuff a couple years before.
Mm-hmm.
I was super awkward.
Yeah.
It didn't make me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
So having all that happen while we were learning about it versus maybe jumping
right.
the gun by a year or two.
That's true.
Would have been nice.
Yeah. And especially like Asian parents don't necessarily prep their kids
mm-hmm.
for it. I learned everything on the streets.
On the streets?
Streets of Korea.
Hardcore.
Yeah. And so by the time we did sex ed, I knew what everything was, but I probably had a different image of what it was supposed to be. So if my parents had actually sat me down and say, when do people love each other, yada, 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 it might have been a little nicer.
It took us a long time. By the time my parents told me, I was like, yeah, I knew that about 6 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm about to go to college.
Yeah.
But thank you for squeezing that in at the
right,
last minute.
As you're going away,
yeah.
You're like, let's talk about sex.
But at least they mentioned it.
Oh, that's so funny. I like your answer. I honestly would, I think I would just fumble and be like, ask your parents. So.
You know, I didn't consider the context. I might get in trouble for that.
Yeah.
But I'm in a phase of my life where I don't care as much about what people think.
I admire that. Okay, let's go to 10-2. We're both going to list 5 words each and come up with a story. And this actually fits because it's totally an improv game, sort of.
Perfect.
Yeah, and
so we're going to be the best at it.
Sure. We'll be the best. I'm going to let you start.
All right, galaxy, clown, rutabaga, plaster, and sphinx. I gave myself a hard one there.
Yeah, oof, okay. Elevator, tulips, mountain, beach, bicycle. Cool?
That's it, yeah.
All right, so there's 10. It doesn't need to have all 10 words in it, and it doesn't have to be those exact words, as long as you can obviously tell that it was inspired by those words, as long as it's a story that makes somewhat of a sense. It doesn't have to be like a true story, but it's something that's true to you.
Okay, let's go for it. All right, so after a day at the beach, I rode my bicycle up a mountain and saw some tulips, and I thought about the universe and galaxies. And the idea that maybe God is just a clown that answers our riddles like a sphinx. And maybe I thought it could provide some insight for my upcoming move, where I'm going to plaster the wall near the elevator and eat rutabagas all day.
Jesus Christ. You used all 10, first of all. And that was really kind of deep. I like the whole God being a clown thing.
I don't know where that came from.
I love it. Okay. I sometimes feel like a clown because I left the beautiful state of California that has mountains and beaches all over the place, and now I live in this quote-unquote concrete jungle where you get on elevators to go anywhere, and shit. Oh, and all I can find, all the nature that I can find in the springtime in the city, which, you know, I'm very thankful for, are all the tulips that they plant all over the city. But it's so obviously quote-unquote man-made. It's obviously not man-made, but it's man-planted. It doesn't belong there. They don't grow there. But I mean, they really, really plaster daffodils and tulips all over the city right about in April. So, you know, it's cool. I'm doing what I gotta do, but I do miss the days where I can get on a bicycle and just right around on the beach. Galaxy rutabaga. There you go. There's my story.
Nice. That was a better use of the word plaster than
I did. Hey, that works. Yeah. Both of them work. Cool. Okay, so we're going to jump right into your interview.
Okay.
Elijah, tell me about growing up, your childhood, your family dynamics.
Yes. I don't know you as well as these other guests.
Yeah, and I think feel like that's wonderful.
So maybe there's more catching up to do.
Yeah.
Maybe we have more in common because we came from the same place.
Right.
I was actually born in Bozeman, Montana.
Oh.
Because my parents were doing a cross-country trip. They used to live in New York. Then they moved to Wisconsin. Then they moved to Montana.
Wow.
So they had me there. And then we moved to Idaho for 5 years. Pocatello, Idaho.
Wow. Okay.
I didn't go to preschool. I went to the Mormon's house next door.
Wow.
Was in love with their daughter.
I love that.
And then my dad got the Silicon Valley job. Back when Silicon Valley jobs were still up and coming.
Right.
And my mom got one too. So that's how we eventually ended up in Palo Alto. At this point, I was five, six years old.
Okay.
We were in Palo Alto. And I was always a very observant and introspective kid.
Okay.
I think I am still as a person.
Mm-hmm.
To the point of it being kind of concerning, where my parents were even wondering at one point whether or not I was going to speak or whether I was going to venture out into the world and become a normal human being.
Oh, wow.
Because I wasn't potty trained. I couldn't walk. I didn't talk.
And this is at like 5 or 6?
No, this is like 4.
Okay.
Like right around the time where you're thinking this should be happening.
Right, now. Absolutely.
And then I suddenly just did everything.
Wow.
But I feel like it's as if I needed those first 4 years just to process the world.
Wow.
Before even putting anything out there.
Yeah.
So I think I've carried on that nature a lot.
That's pretty cool.
Even though I've counterbalanced it mm-hmm. largely, that's definitely an integral part of me from that upbringing. So those are some of my earliest things.
And what about like, how was your dynamic with your family? Siblings? Any siblings?
Not yet. My dynamic with my family was really good.
It was just you. Okay.
My parents got divorced when I was 8.
Okay.
And a couple of years later, my dad had a child with his wife. So I have a half-sister, we're 11 years apart.
Oh, wow.
So we don't feel like siblings.
Yeah.
We're more like friends.
Yeah.
Because when I left for college, that was around the time I was able to start talking to her.
Oh, okay.
Because she was 7 or so.
Yeah, right.
And then I was gone. And we've only since reconnected.
Right.
Now she's about to go to college.
Oh, wow.
So we didn't really get much sibling bonding time.
Yeah. Okay, well, so tell me about going to school.
Yeah.
Friends, adolescence.
My first friend is still a friend of mine.
Nice.
We met when we were 5. I would go to his house every day after school.
No.
He was really cool. He was a child actor.
Oh, cool.
And for upwards of 10 years, he was doing what I wished I was doing and I never did.
Mm-hmm.
He was on commercials and he did church youth group performances.
Right.
And we would go to his house every day after school and play video games and watch Friends.
Yeah.
Oh, the 90s. I was allergic to his cat, like hardcore.
Oh, okay.
I had bad allergies. So my eyes would be red and I would be sneezing.
And every day you went.
Every day I still went. Because that was the kind of friend I was.
Yeah.
I would do anything.
Yeah.
So that was my first friend. I've had some other good friends. I was always the type of person who had a few very close friends.
Mm-hmm.
And not a very wide circle. So I got along really, really well with a few people.
Okay. Why do you think that was?
I don't know. I think I placed a lot of trust
mm-hmm.
in people. And that took a lot of energy from me.
Right.
Because I was always very introverted.
Yeah.
And I would always sit in the corner and be drawing.
Yeah.
Sometimes I would stay away from the other kids during snack time because I was allergic to peanut butter. More allergies.
Oh, geez. Okay.
And this was before they had those zones.
Yeah.
Those signs up. So.
Oh, okay.
I felt a little bit like a loner sometimes.
Yeah.
So when I latched onto somebody, we would spend all of our time together.
Right.
And play
okay.
pretend.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it was I had a couple of weird friendships
mm-hmm.
because of that. Because I attracted other people who are also that way.
Uh-huh.
I remember I ripped a friendship necklace off of my friend.
Oh my God.
I don't know where all these violent stories are coming from.
I love it.
I ripped a friendship necklace off of his neck.
Oh wow. Because you were mad at him?
I was mad at him. He did something that in retrospect was not equivalent. I had a plastic bag
uh-huh.
with my swim clothes in it and he ripped that.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason I thought that would be an equal punishment.
Oh.
Like you ripped my plastic bag, so I'm going to take this necklace that you took all day to bead and manufacture and just rip it off your neck.
Oh, it's like when he made it.
Yeah.
Oh, my heart breaks.
But
that's that best friend that you're still friends with.
No.
Oh, it's a different friend.
Not that one.
Are you still friends with that guy?
I think we're friends on Facebook.
Oh.
I think okay. I friended him like 10 years later.
Yeah.
So I think it's okay. It's just one of those things.
Forgiven you.
I laugh about it now. I don't think it was a friendship necklace for us. So maybe I was jealous.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That was elementary school.
Yeah. Did you continuously go to school with the same friends? Were you guys all kind of living in that area for a long time?
I stayed through K-12 with maybe 3 people that I stayed in touch with from elementary school.
Okay.
And really only the one that I told you about is still actually, we've literally followed each other our entire lives.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, everybody else, most of my other friends I met in middle school.
Okay.
That's when I, not blossomed, but I opened up a lot.
Came
out of my shell. That was it. That was my social peak. 8th grade. All downhill from there.
Oh. Tell me about high school. High school's fun.
High school is fun. Well, high school was a good training ground for me, I would say. And my parents were already separated at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So I was learning to live 2 weeks at a time. They were pretty close to each other, so we could do longer periods of time.
Yeah.
But it was kind of jarring because 2 weeks is enough time to get really used to one thing
and
to another. So I definitely became a lot more independent in high school.
Yeah.
I tried out a whole bunch of different identities.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Just in terms of both physically and how I thought of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely a band geek for a very long time. And I hung out with the other geeks, which is cool.
Yeah.
But then I started doing like student council.
Yeah.
And getting involved with homecoming and going to the games. And I got to know the popular kids.
Yeah.
And I would go to dances with them. And we would talk about other stuff together.
Yeah.
And I would become more interested in baggier clothing and doing my hair up, you know, the way all the boys did then.
Yeah.
So That was interesting.
Oh, the early 2000s.
Yeah, and so that was fun. And then there was the first girl I dated.
Yeah.
Who went to Lynbrook.
There you go.
And
my alma mater.
Yeah. Our first kiss was to Don't Funk With My Heart. I remember that song very clearly. The zeitgeist of that time.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
So, yeah, that was sort of my trial by fire.
Yeah.
Into high school.
You said you kind of had to, like, you were switching kind of back and forth on who you are.
Yeah.
How do you think that kind of played into you becoming who you are now as an adult?
Ooh, that's a good question. I started doing the performance arts in high school.
Okay.
So it was later than a lot of my friends had been doing it. I didn't join theater until senior year. And there were all these thespians who had lived in the hallowed halls of the school theater for years and years.
Yeah.
So I felt like I was joining a club as an outsider or a special guest.
Yeah.
I'd done some things like slam poetry and jazz and the morning announcements.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd gotten myself more used to throwing myself into the spotlight. But I feel like I was always, in a weird way, destined for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're an astrology person, but I'm a Virgo Leo cusp.
Okay.
So while I am very sensitive and introspective, I have this strange desire to throw myself into the spotlight sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 5 or 6, I would make home videos where I'd be making a recipe like dumplings or telling a story of my dinosaur from my children's book.
Aww.
And I would tell my parents, make sure the camera's on me.
Oh, how cute.
So apparently I had this side of myself, which fully blossomed end of high school going into college. So I think that combined with a lot of life lessons I learned,
mm-hmm.
have been a long process over the last 10 years to getting to where I am today.
Yeah.
But the seeds of it were already planted then. I think I made a huge number of mistakes in high school. I definitely...
Tell me.
Well, I was kind of a social chameleon.
Okay.
Like I said, but I was not used to having a thick skin.
Okay.
So putting myself out there so much, I started to make enemies.
Mm.
I don't know why necessarily. I'm trying to think. People maybe just... People who are jealous that I was doing a lot of things.
That. Yeah.
People who thought I was...
Showing off.
Right. And that I was maybe a loser who was trying to be cool. I don't know.
Mm.
That's how I projected onto myself.
Yeah.
But I got really caught up in how I was being perceived.
Yeah.
And I think I didn't fully blossom socially until college.
Okay.
High school. That's why I was saying high school is more of a training ground.
How did you deal with that? I mean, as much as everybody goes through that at that age... Everybody deals with it differently. How do you think you came out of it or dealt with it in that moment?
In senior year of high school, in that moment, I dealt with it by starting to have anxiety and panic attacks.
Ooh.
That was my coping mechanism. As soon as all this crazy shit started happening, both good and bad, getting into college, starting to be on stage, hearing gossip about me, being more in the spotlight.
Yeah.
Like, I did a graduation speech where I thought I was pretty funny and my grandparents, of course, recorded it. And in the recording, you can hear people whispering, oh, that's Elijah. Everybody hates him.
Oh, man.
And that just ruined me for a good month.
Oh, I bet.
So I thought, I'm not going to put myself out there again. This is terrible.
Oh, wow.
But it's interesting because the anxiety and panic that I had was not just related to other people.
Mm-hmm.
It started to become self-serving. It became something that would flare up whenever I had even tiny little stressful things. And it's become a constant problem that I deal with because my mind has just gotten so used to that.
Right.
So used to projecting fear and stress onto myself.
Yeah.
And letting it affect my physical and mental well-being.
Okay.
Ironically, though, to answer your question more directly, I think that's how I ultimately was able to cope with my life problems externally. By going through this internal struggle, I learned a lot about myself and how I work.
Mm-hmm.
And that I learned that the real enemy is the way that I think
and
the way that I perceive things. As soon as I was able to start flipping that switch, none of the external stuff really was as big of a deal.
Yeah.
Because I realized it's just, there's always stuff going on. There's always shit happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the enemy was the way that I was processing it.
Yeah.
And turning myself into this ball of stress and tension.
I mean, I assume you still, as we do as adults, you go through hardships, obviously, and the feeling of being judged. And I don't think anybody can ever escape that, but you've learned how to kind of deal with it and cope with it. What do you think you do to cope with it and not let it linger? Because that's the part that sucks, right? Like the lingering part.
Yes.
Because everybody's going to have that moment of anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have been listening to you talk about therapy, and I want to say I really admire you talking about this stuff because it's so brave and honest. Yeah. I've started seeing a therapist as well. This was not something I was normally used to doing.
Mm-hmm.
I had one session with a therapist when I was at Harvard, and I was being extremely articulate about my problem.
Mm-hmm.
I voiced every single perspective and voice and concern. And at the end of it, he just said, "Wow, it sounds like you know what you're talking about."
Wow.
That was it. It sounds like you know what you're talking about. And I think that's the problem. I want somebody to see through that and really challenge me.
Uh-huh.
Because I can be very articulate, and I was an English major. I think about words all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So just because I can manipulate a word doesn't mean that I feel great.
Right.
About what I'm describing. So right now I think it's working out better because I've been going at it for a couple months.
Okay.
Somebody who does hold me to the flame a little bit more.
Okay.
I think to me that is a solution, to have other people hold me accountable.
Right.
When I'm in a relationship, mm-hmm. I actually feel less anxiety.
Mm.
Because I gravitate toward people who just slap me in the face and they say, "Hey, you're lost in the clouds right now.
Yeah.
Let's think about getting groceries. Or let's think about going to this thing tonight."
Oh, that's good, yeah.
And when I only have myself to regulate, there's a lot more work to do.
Yeah.
Maybe it's important work. You know, it's work that needs to happen.
Yeah.
I need to be self-sufficient in that way. But it's always a different dynamic when somebody else can see that in you
mm-hmm.
and call it out. So as for myself personally, a strategy that I've been developing is to just see my anxiety as something that is there
mm-hmm.
and to welcome it and to almost embrace it.
Yeah.
Because I think part of the spiral of fear that I often get is when I become scared of it.
Mm-hmm.
When I panic and I realize that I'm never going to be able to stop.
Right.
I tell myself this is just going to go downhill from here.
Right.
And then it does. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
But when I say, "All right, yay. Whatever, this is a side effect of the way I think. How cool that I'm getting this alternate perspective on things."
Yeah.
I'll just let it be there.
Yeah.
It'll keep me in check. It'll let me realize that life isn't perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll move on. Or I'll move on with it.
Yeah.
And then it usually ends up minimizing.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ongoing struggle. I'm not telling you right now that I'm perfect.
Oh, absolutely. Your own head is the hardest thing to get out of. So,
yeah,
but that's great. Yeah. So you went to therapy that one time in college, and then you haven't gone till recently?
Correct.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of, especially being in the industry.
Yes.
I can only imagine how hard it is to get out of the feeling of being judged, right? Because literally they're judging you every single day in, day out.
I mean, that's the perception you have to change.
Yeah. Oh.
Part of the problem was I was going into these auditions thinking they're judging me.
Ah.
And then it becomes that way.
Right.
It took me a good 50 or 60 auditions to get out of that mindset.
Wow.
Because it is an inherently terrifying thing. I get that. They're sitting there expecting something from you. There are expectations.
Right.
And you're providing it in a very high stakes mm-hmm. scenario.
Yeah.
These people are connected.
Yeah.
You know? But eventually the shift that I had, and my manager is a Buddhist, and he really helps with attractive visualization
mm-hmm.
and that kind of thing. And it's the idea that I'm just giving them this positive
energy.
Force, vibe, energy. And I am here to help them, not to be arrogant. It's the opposite of that. I so want you to feel better.
Right.
I hope that this will be the answer to your search.
Right.
I hope I end your search for for this part.
Yeah. It's a great way to look at it.
And I think I have something positive to offer
mm-hmm.
for that. So that way you're all more on the same side of the table.
Mm-hmm.
You're all just trying to get this project going.
Yeah.
It's not like them versus you.
Right.
Or you're trying to pass a test.
I did actually hear that exact thing on a podcast recently about how they're not sitting there judging you. They're really just looking for the person that fits the part that they want.
Exactly.
But I can only imagine how it feels to, because I haven't done any real audition since high school. So
did you do like plays and stuff?
Oh no, I didn't get any parts. I auditioned for two plays and I didn't get either one. I just remember that all eyes on me, and then the thoughts in my head, it's just, oh, I'm doing terrible. Oh, do they like me? Do they not?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm. Very common.
It's really something that I would think takes a lot of time, like you said, 50, 60 auditions. Yeah, to just realize that is not their MO.
Well, I started going on the casting side
mm-hmm.
because I've been working on producing a TV show myself.
Oh, cool.
And we filmed the pilot episode.
My friend Bill. William. Will.
My friend Will. That's right. You got it.
Bill. William. What?
Quick plug.
Yeah.
Shakespeare comes back to life in modern day New York City.
Awesome.
So I'm submitting it to festivals, trying to set up meetings.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
It looks great. It looks funny.
Thank you. Thank you. It was
and
rough.
And you studied Shakespeare?
I did.
Yeah.
Both as an English major and theater major in college.
Yeah. Cool.
And then at my MFA program.
Okay. Oh, awesome.
Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And I believe so much in the idea that there's still a lot in the text.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just what people perform 90% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very alive.
Yeah.
Kind of badass.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I was playing off of with it. And doing the casting
mm-hmm.
was very refreshing to me as an actor. Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of people would come in very nervous,
mm-hmm.
very anxious.
Yeah.
With that mentality. Oh, my God. Did I do okay?
Right.
And for me, I was just thinking, I want to find the right person for this. What a joyful experience.
Right.
I don't know why people are coming in with such a nervous energy.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, oh, light bulb.
Oh, yeah. I can see that for sure.
They're just looking for somebody to help them with this really exciting thing.
Yeah. I mean, job interviews. That's what they are. Mm-hmm. I think. So it's been a long time since I've been a manager. I was a manager for a long time. And while I was a manager or soon after I was a manager, I was very good at interviews. And I think I completely forgot. I mean, I haven't really interviewed for a job since I got this job 3.5 years ago. So I can only imagine how I would be now. But that's also a point. You need to keep doing it because
right.
you need to keep reminded of what it is, because I feel like time goes by and you don't put yourself in their shoes and then you'll quickly forget again that judgment is not the point of
right.
an interview or an audition.
Did you interview other people?
Yeah.
As a manager?
Right. Yeah. So then that kind of, I think, got me really good for my interviews later or during my management career when I was interviewing for jobs. That was great. I never didn't get a job.
I'm not surprised.
Thanks. But now I don't know how I would do because it's been a long time and I have a hard time talking about myself I talk about myself.
You have more perspective now. Yes.
Yeah.
I think you're better. I would say you're better.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Let's go back a little bit
okay.
to relationships. And you were saying earlier that you noticed that you do better kind of controlling your anxiety and stuff when you're in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been like a serial monogamist? Are you a relationship person? Or do you find yourself kind of having somebody you can depend on all the time? Because it sounds like you always had like a very close friend that was always kind of by your side and then
yeah.
relationship.
It's interesting. Because I always have this desire to be free and independent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking back about my history, and I think I've been in a relationship more often than I haven't. I find myself attracted to being with people,
yeah.
whether it is a friend or a relationship. And it doesn't always feel like my choice, but when does it ever, right?
Right.
I think perhaps part of it is just being so open and trusting with people.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a door that says, hey, come connect with me.
Yeah.
And now in this phase of my life, I'm learning so much about myself. I really feel more deliberate in terms of what balance I want to strike.
Mm-hmm.
This is my first time. I'm moving to my own place for the first time in my life.
Oh, okay.
Literally my own place.
Yeah.
But then I feel like inside, I'm also getting to my own place for the first time.
Yeah.
I'm not in school. I'm not with anyone.
Right.
So it's a little scary.
Yeah.
It's also a little exciting. But I think I'm about to really learn who that independent person is.
Yeah, that's exciting.
I mean, who knows? Maybe you'll come back to me in a few months and I'll be with somebody
again. I know. Yeah, my girlfriend moved in.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So who's to say? I am okay with any possibilities and potentialities.
Yeah.
But at this very moment, that's where I am. And the more I worry about it, the more I realize that's not a good mindset to have. That's precisely the problem with you, Elijah. You start overthinking these things.
Right.
And that's what's causing you the stress.
Yeah, and being able to do that for yourself will really, I think, set you free, really. And that's what you're working on, so that's really good, right?
Yeah, it's it's what RuPaul says. If you can't love yourself, how are you going to love somebody else?
Amen.
Amen.
Let's talk a little bit about being an actor and the struggles of finding, you know, constant paycheck, really, because that's got to be rough.
Hey, actors out there, don't give up.
Yeah.
But... It's really weird, it's a hard thing because in grad school, all we learned was this amazing craft. Mm-hmm. We went to Russia, the Moscow Art Theater. It was great, and I have great connections. They are responsible for me getting an agent.
Right.
All of this great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the business side of things is such a particular skill, and it's essential to actually making it the thing that you do in your life.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have a day job and do theater in the evenings and weekends all you want, and I support that. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to fully commit to this, I heard somebody say this once, but number one, you have to ask yourself, is this the thing I have to be doing?
Mm-hmm.
If not, you shouldn't be doing it. And I don't want to sugarcoat that. It's really,
right.
You'll wake up 10 years later and you'll be resentful that you were chasing auditions the whole time.
Right.
So number one, it has to bring you joy. It has to be literally something that you can't not do.
Yeah.
And then number two, what follows from that is if that's what you really want to do, then you'll find a way to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a creative person, which you should be in this case,
yeah.
You'll find a way to make ends meet, so to speak. I mean, I was able to teach, which is, I'm incredibly lucky to be able to do that
mm-hmm.
because I tried out so many different academic subjects first before settling on the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So I teach a lot of different kinds of kids.
Yeah.
I started out doing my specialty, which was English and writing, but now I do math and science too.
Cool.
I work with a lot of special needs.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah.
And I'm starting to develop a market for myself in Manhattan.
Oh, awesome.
Which is a great market for tutoring.
Yeah.
A lot of stressed out parents.
Right.
And for good reason. I mean, it's such a competitive environment. It's very comparable to the Bay Area now.
Right. Yeah.
Or the Bay Area now has risen to match what New York has been for a while.
Yeah. Okay.
So I've been able to tap into that. I cannot do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And the industry where you are. First, I would panic. I really admire that.
Oh, trust me. I panic daily.
Sure. I guess it's normal.
Yeah.
Last thing I'd say about that is you really have to think like a business.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is related. You may be doing something on the side, but your acting career itself, you have to be thinking about it as a business, even if you're not making a lot of money from it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to think as if you are an enterprise and an industry. Start thinking about how the paychecks are going to come in.
Yeah.
And that attractive energy will somehow get you there. And start thinking about how you're being represented. Your manager is like your publicist.
Yeah.
In a way. Your agent is like your liaison.
Mm-hmm.
And your accountant. And you are your own CEO. You direct where you go. Your manager also kind of helps with that. But You think about these aspects of yourself very technically and very logically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the way you have to in order to make it work.
Yeah.
We'll see if I do.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say I am, just to put it out there.
Yes, you will. Absolutely. Did you ever have moments of just like, fuck this all. I want to give up and get out of this.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not right.
Totally.
I assume more than once.
Yeah,
how do you pull yourself out of that? Those kind of situations.
The first time that happened was my first 2 years in New York.
Okay.
And I was having a couple auditions every once in a while, but I was waiting for maybe one audition every month or two.
Okay.
And I was working at a place I did not like.
Mm-hmm.
And that was most of my day.
Yeah.
And I was just getting into arguments with my girlfriend because we were letting the money stress us out. I was never
right.
at home. It was very stressful. And I think back to that time and I can't remember anything from it. It's a dark tunnel because I was literally having no moments or few moments of joy.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, we're here because of me and because of this thing that I've chosen to do that I'm not even doing.
Right.
I hadn't booked anything yet.
Yeah.
Not a play, not a show, nothing. I booked maybe two things. They both got cut.
Oof. Yeah.
So that was just a little tease.
Yeah.
And for 2 years.
Wow.
And how I got myself out of that was, what do they say? I pulled myself up by my bootstraps.
Mm-hmm.
And just started emailing my resume and headshot out to people. And I reached out to a manager and he wanted to take me on. And a few months later, I started booking some TV roles.
Oh, nice.
And he started inspiring me to be more proactive. So that became a positive chain reaction.
Oh, great.
So that was one moment. And then I had another moment where it started to get in the way of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very hard because I was thinking to myself, I could be so much more free in a way. There weren't too many other things about New York at the time that I liked besides the fact of the opportunities here.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard for me to fully justify being here.
Right.
Especially if I had the opportunity to build a life with somebody.
Yeah.
And that was a very, very hard juncture to get
mm-hmm.
through. The idea that we wanted kind of different things in that way. But I've stuck with it so far.
Yeah.
I'm moving to the East Village, which is a place where I think I'll be much more in tune with my inner self.
That's good.
I've been on the Upper West Side for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that made me feel like I had already skipped to being an old Jewish person. that's everybody who was around me, which, lovely lifestyle.
Yeah, I love it.
Love it. But I'm thinking, give myself another couple of years before I go back to that.
Yeah.
You know, enjoy being slightly younger.
Yeah.
For as long as I can.
Right. Yeah. I'm still learning the neighborhoods. I didn't know that Upper West Side... or the family, Jewish families. I knew the Upper East Side was kind of like the younger.
I tutored at the JCC, the Jewish Community Center across the street for a long time.
Oh, wow.
Big building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Epicenter, uh-huh.
Oh. Okay, so where do you think you are in your journey right now?
Where am I in my journey? I'm in a very fun place, I think, because I am encountering all of these opportunities to define myself. And I know defining yourself is a weird term because you're not supposed to label yourself. But I mean, just form and sculpt what I am really passionate about.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I've ever truly had the opportunity to do that. To fully center and align myself. In acting school, we did a lot of Alexander technique, which is basically all about aligning your body in a way that also aligns your mind and spirit. And one of the things I love that we did is, I think it's called soft adjustments.
Okay.
So the teacher would sort of push you. And you have to just let yourself be pushed.
Ugh.
This is not... This
sounds like a nightmare.
No, it's very peaceful. It's like a soft nudge.
Yeah.
Like a wave.
Okay.
And the people who had tension in their lives would sort of try to resist.
Yeah.
But just letting yourself kind of go with the flow, that's something that I'm ready to do now. I'm ready to not try to fight life, but just try to see where it takes me and let that sort of sculpt who I am.
Yeah.
So in terms of the journey, it's maybe a crossroads. It's maybe the beginning of this really cool hike.
Yeah.
I'm taking the metaphor too far. But it's an exciting time for me, and that comes with a lot of fear.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure.
But I'll take that too, because when is there not
that
other side?
Yeah.
And yeah, from the conversations we have had, like an improv class and all of this stuff about dealing with fears and getting a fresh start, it sounds like you're also in a similar place.
Just
establishing who you are and what you're doing. And
trying.
More power to you. I think you're doing great.
Thank you. I mean, this episode is not about me, so I'm not going to get too much into it, but... starting this podcast seriously was one of the best things I've ever done, because I'm not only looking at who, you know, my friends are and learning more about them, but I'm looking into my past and things I've walked out in my past are just rushing back. Anyway, not about me. This is all going on.
I feel you there.
Yeah, but it's dealing with the dealing with what you're going through or what you've gone through, I think is the most important thing to move forward.
And where we are, the ages we are, it seems to be a full circle of sorts.
Yeah.
At this time, I'm starting to begin a feeling of coming back, reconnecting with myself 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Right.
For some reason. Maybe I'm in a place now where I can accept that energy again.
Mm-hmm.
But it does feel kind of satisfying when you can go back to that place and revisit those things.
Yeah. And kind of learn to become okay with what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And okay with what you blocked out, you know? And I think that's what I've been learning so much.
Yeah, you let it back in when you're ready for it.
Yeah.
And it will make you stronger.
Yeah.
I do firmly believe that.
I believe it. I'm just struggling. It's hard.
We all are. It's okay, Christine.
Okay. How do you feel like right now, today, physically, mentally, and spiritually?
Oh, man. Today was a rough morning because this week I found the apartment I'm moving into.
Mm-hmm.
I found it. I signed for it. I found it, applied for it, and signed for it. All the while, I had a couple auditions and a lot going on at work.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just totally exhausted. I've been getting an average of maybe 4 hours, Oof. 5 hours.
Yeah.
So my body is now realizing this. The buildup to all this has been weeks and weeks and weeks.
Right.
So my body chooses to malfunction after the thing has been achieved.
Oh, yeah.
So now it's like, I'm going to make you feel terrible. I'm going to give you a headache.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you all drowsy and lethargic.
Yep.
Not want to do anything. So I've been sorting clothes. I'm trying to do Marie Kondo again for my old place.
I don't know what that is.
The joy of, oh my goodness, the title will come to me, the magical joy of tidying.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like just making sure everything's in order for mental peace.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm going to the clothes section of it. And last night I was trying to do this and I just fell asleep on my pile of clothes.
Oh man, I bet.
And woke up on the pile of clothes feeling like total mess.
Yeah.
Mentally, I've been more positive. I was thinking to myself, okay, I'm kind of a mess in this very moment, but this is all for a good cause. I just achieved this great thing.
Mm-hmm.
I should give myself permission to chill. And I think that dovetails spiritually into just this idea of trying to keep a calm energy no matter where I am specifically or what I'm doing, which is hard because I have been feeling very crowded in my head. Things have been very chaotic this month.
Mm.
And it's been posing a good challenge for me. So that's where I am. But overall, positive, because I think new pages are being turned.
Yeah.
I'm in a good place. Awesome. I appreciate the checking in.
Yeah.
I like checking in.
Good. Yeah. Looking at yourself is something we always forget to do, you know?
It is.
I'm glad I can be a part of you doing that. What do you think the biggest growth within yourself has been since you were in your early 20s to now?
I definitely had a dark night of the soul in my early 20s. I asked somebody who was my age now. She was 28, 29.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked her, do things get better? Because I feel terrible right now.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yes, you will feel more mature and centered. And I do believe that. I think somewhere along my mid-20s, I went through a lot of stuff that was not easy on me.
Yeah.
For instance, the last 5 years of being in the real world,
mm-hmm.
they weren't fun all the time, but they were necessary and they were helpful. I had grown so used to this freedom and this joy of being in school that I was not used to this, all of this stuff happening. So, not to mention developing a thick skin, finally.
Yeah.
And caring less about what others think. So, I think that has been the biggest thing. Not dissipating myself and my energy so much, but to really be able to focus on using that energy to cultivate my inner sanctuary.
Yeah,
so
there
to speak.
Go.
Even today, I have problems with it, but I think I've made major improvements since my early 20s. I was definitely very insecure about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I did things because others thought I should. And don't get me wrong, I had a great time in college.
Yeah.
And now I long for those days because I want to tell myself, be more confident, be more self-assured.
Don't we all, if
use
we could
these
go
tools
back.
That you're being given.
Yeah.
If only.
I know, if only.
Another way that I've been thinking, which is slightly more helpful, is in the next 5 years or 5 years from now, I'll be thinking back to this time.
Right.
And saying, why was I stressing out so much about the past? I should have enjoyed what was happening then. But actually, even that is a bit too intense for me. I would rather not place that pressure on myself to say, be good to your future self.
Yeah.
I think right now my mentality is not to have a mentality. It's just to exist and take things in and take a note of them, sure.
Mm-hmm.
I've been trying journaling.
Oh, good.
Which helps. So take a note of everything, really soak it in, but just live a little.
Yeah.
Sounds cliche, but it's true for me.
Hmm. That's hard to do.
It is hard to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think we're programmed into thinking about what's going to happen next rather than what we're doing at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I catch myself through this interview kind of being like, stop thinking about where I'm going to go next.
Right.
Just because I'm trying to keep this thing flowing. But then I feel like I'm not giving you all of the attention when it needs to be there.
The brain is a weird thing.
Oh, it is.
It sure is.
It sure is. Well, that was great. Oh, tell me a little bit more about journaling.
Yeah.
How has that affected you?
I keep an insane amount of journals. Maybe this reflects some of the things I do in life, but I start a lot of booklets and I don't finish them. I think to myself, oh, well, I started that journal a long time ago and it's been a while. Let me just start a new one.
Right.
So I have about 10 to 20
okay.
of these booklets. Some of them are full.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them are half full.
Okay. What do you write in them?
Just my uncensored thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I document moments in life. I guess the irony is that when you're truly enjoying life, you don't have a lot of time to be self-aware of it.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is me trying to chronicle really exciting experiences I had after the fact. Like me trying to remember a whole, like, this awesome three-month trip I had in England, you know?
Okay, yeah.
So not a lot of it is real time.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a decent amount of my life chronicled for my memoirs someday.
Yeah.
And it's mostly those. I do write down stream of consciousness a lot, mm-hmm. a lot of my ruminations and thoughts. It is a thing that helps me.
Yeah.
Because thoughts run through my head at a very fast pace, mm-hmm. and it helps to get them down into words.
Yeah. When did you start journaling?
I think I had some journals in middle school.
Okay.
I remember this because I was writing about liking this girl in my science class in 7th grade.
Yeah.
And it was my first real crush.
Oh.
And it was sex ed.
Yeah.
And it was super, couldn't have been more awkward.
Yeah.
Like, I was trying to flirt with her in sex ed.
Oh, that's funny.
And I remember that entry, one of my first entries was, "We changed seats today. I'm now sitting at her table." And just babbling incoherently about how excited I was.
Oh, that's great. That is awesome.
And then my sorrow when the seating arrangement changed.
Right. Oh, how funny. How do you think journaling has helped you centering yourself?
Well, as I mentioned, it's sort of an outlet for the things that run through my head.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets them out of my head.
Mm, right.
How it has helped me is that it's given me a way to interact with myself. I externalize myself onto the journal and I have a dialogue with me.
Yeah.
Which is very helpful because, like I said, having that other person to call me out, if I write it down, what I'm thinking, I can call myself out.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I write stuff down, I make actual realizations. It's like, oh, wow, writing this down, I'm thinking this is a solution to this problem I'm having.
Yeah.
Or this is the way to do it. This is the reasoning behind my thought process.
Yeah.
And here's the way out of it.
How often do you go back and read old entries?
I've been doing it more recently, obviously, because of this full circle thing.
Yeah.
But every year I do it at least.
Okay.
Maybe sometimes a couple times a year.
Oh.
I'm about to do it again because I'm going to go through all my books, papers.
Right, yeah.
Really figure out what sparks joy,
right.
as Marie Kondo says. But I have a feeling I'm going to keep all those journals just because, you know, it's the...
No, I think that's great.
It's the record of me.
Yeah. That's really great that you write things that bring you joy because I tend to journal pretty much only when I'm going through hard times,
mm-hmm.
which also helps too because when I go back and read those, I'm like, oh man, I was really going through it then and look how far I've come and I'm not feeling that anymore. So I probably go back to mine every like 2 years, 3 years,
oh, sure.
not very often at all, but I think I'm going to try the whole writing things that make me happy because that's a good reminder.
I mean,
also.
I write things. I write about things that stress me out.
Yeah.
And I do write those, but you have to include the happy.
Right.
You have to give it a fair chance.
Yeah, because otherwise you might forget.
You have to see both sides of it.
Yeah.
I think you and me personally, but also people in general, don't focus on the positive things that happen.
Yeah.
When a negative thing happens, it just takes up our attention so much
right.
and monopolizes us.
Yeah.
When it's positive, it can be taken for granted. I don't know why.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I loved that.
Yeah, that was deep.
Well, to lighten things up a little,
yes.
let's go to Ask Choi, our advice segment, where I have a letter sent in to me, and we will try to give the best advice we can. And again, everybody, we are not professionals. We are just opening it up for discussion. So maybe hearing us talk about this will help you deal with whatever you're going through.
Take it with a grain of salt.
Exactly. So let me pull up the letter. Dear Christine, I just moved to a new city about a year ago and for a job, and a friend of mine introduced me to his friend in the same city. We met for dinner one time and I quickly realized that we really don't have much in common. She, to me, seemed really shallow and, at the risk of sounding rude, very annoying. She seems to think that we really hit it off and told my friend that she was so happy to have met me. We've continued to hang out time to time because I thought I should give her the benefit of the doubt and thought maybe she'll grow on me. I must say, that did not happen and I dread getting together with her every time. Now I'm making close friends of my own. I'm having a hard time setting aside time for her. And frankly, I don't really want to. The last few times I had plans with other friends, she tried to invite herself and I kept having to make up stories to stop her from coming. I don't think I can keep this up for much longer and I don't want to hurt her feelings since she never really did anything wrong. What should I do?
Whew. Oh my God. Talk about a situation.
I know.
Do I have to start?
You have to
start.
That's
how it works. Okay. Well. Not knowing the specific person, but drawing upon my own points of reference, I can attest to the difficulty of that, especially because the other person did nothing wrong. I agree with that.
Right.
The other person is just who she is.
Yeah.
Obviously, maybe there's some decorum that occurs in social situations where you shouldn't always invite yourself over to others.
Right.
That's always in my head.
Yeah.
Like I always think about, am I that person? Like, I don't want to be too
right.
forward with trying to make things happen all the time. But on the other hand, the person who is dealing with this, I think it's kind of related to what we were saying. You have to live your best life.
Mm-hmm.
Just the idea, I think something in the letter was, I can't find the time to schedule her in.
Right.
It's already being treated like a business obligation.
Right.
And why, we have enough boundaries in life. Why create more rules and requirements for yourself than you need to? I would say, especially since this person is getting used to the new city now and has close friends.
Yeah.
Find a way to not let that person dictate their life.
But how? Like, what do you do?
I wouldn't ghost.
Okay, I was like,
that's
should I ghost?
To me. Yeah, I wouldn't ghost. But I also wouldn't say, like, you're annoying.
Right.
it's a balance between the
yeah.
two.
Yeah.
What that balance entails, I don't know, man. I would focus on the aspect of what is it that does cross a line. For instance, I really appreciated that you want to spend a lot of time with me, but I have a lot going on in my life, which may be true.
Yeah.
I have to have time to myself.
Right.
This is just for me. It's not you. It's not anyone else. It's just time for myself. And I need to dictate my own schedule at the moment and my own priorities. And that, when you say priorities and scheduling, that could mean the friends that you want to be with.
Right.
But you don't have to say that.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I do. It's not a lie. I wouldn't call it a lie. I would talk to the person and I would say, hey, I haven't talked to my parents in a long time.
Right.
This is not you.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Yeah.
The same with my parents. I mean, I love talking to my mom. Sometimes I just can't.
Right.
I need time to myself.
And I think in a way, by being, again, not like directly honest about how you feel about this person, but somewhat honest of, sorry, but I can't hang out with you this much anymore because I appreciate you having been there for me while I was brand new here, but I am getting to know more people and I can't always bring around like a new person around them because we're kind of a group. That's so tough. But I mean, I feel like kind of, but then I feel like maybe not severing that relationship, but at least finding some separation is going to be more fair to that person, the other person, right? Because if this was like a romantic relationship, that's holding them back. I mean, even in a friendship, they're holding them back. But I mean,
it would be almost easier in a romantic relationship because when that ends, don't often stay friends.
Right. That's true.
But the
friendship,
it's like, I'm just saying, I don't like you as a person. I don't like hanging out with you.
Ugh.
But I think you are right. You do need to be, you need to skew toward the brutal honesty.
Yeah.
You do need to say something about, I may hang out with other friends.
Yeah.
Because they are treating my time differently.
Right.
Than you are, and my energy.
And it might end up being obvious that you have more in common with those people than this person just by the, you know, activities they do. Because that might be a thing where she might not like the activities they end up doing together because they don't mesh.
Yeah.
They don't have that much in common. So maybe the other girl would hopefully get the clue and maybe move on. But that's, I feel like I've been on both sides.
Me
so
too. Me
yeah.
Too.
So that's,
I would tell them their good qualities.
Yeah. Right.
And encourage them to be and recommend other people that they would get along better with.
Yeah.
But it's just the dynamic where I am right now in my life, who I want to be with, it just doesn't seem to be.
Yeah.
It's a lot for me. It's a lot on me.
Gosh, maybe even bring them along a couple times. Because in that group of friends, there might be somebody that would get along with her. And maybe they'll form a relationship and they'll break out of the group.
There you go. That happens a lot. They'll split off.
That does happen. So, hey, who knows? Try everything we just said.
Please, do try this at home. Light some sage, get some crystals, meditate, sleep on it.
Yeah.
and go out with this mission of honesty.
Oof, yeah.
But make it a positive mission. Make it a positive, joyful task.
Yes.
If you don't get positive energy back, that's okay.
Yeah.
You can still make the choice to be positive and to feel great about it.
And like I said earlier, make sure, you know, you're doing it out of fairness to her.
Yes.
Because, again, she didn't do anything wrong. It's just that you guys are not a match. That's it.
It's going to build toxins in you if you don't say anything. Just turn that into love and send it out and let it be done.
Perfect. How perfect was that? And also, I didn't really do like a favorite moment or the funniest memory of us in the beginning because we've only met a couple months ago. But
we barely know each other.
But I actually thought of one while we were recording.
Okay.
Yeah. So before our improv show leading up to our graduation show, we had a couple outside of the class practices and rehearsals. And there was a moment where two people had just done their scene and Elijah came in to do a new scene and he was like, "I'll keep the chair here." And the person didn't hear him and just pulled the chair and Elijah fully trusted that chair was going to be there and just right to the floor he went. And it was, oh, that was such a great moment. It was so funny.
That's a great story.
Yes.
That's the epitome of my life. That is me trusting somebody fully and then just getting owned.
And I just wanted to make sure that was permanently existing in this
I'm glad that's
space.
Out there. In
yes.
Podcast verse. Thank
yes,
you for that.
Yes, of course.
Me falling completely
yes.
on my butt.
No, it was so great. I loved it. That was a great moment.
Classic.
With that said, let's just get into some closing questions.
All right.
What brings you the most joy right now?
Ooh, music has been bringing me a lot of joy. Something about music, it marries my desire for creative input and output, but also something that is more visceral, something that connects.
Right, yeah.
So,
like playing music or
both.
Listening? Okay.
Surrounding myself with music.
Yeah.
I've been getting really into disco, actually.
Oh.
And beats and funk and house and soul and all
oh,
that
wow.
stuff.
Yeah.
And it really reverberates.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing has really
okay.
been getting me up.
Yeah.
I feel good.
Yeah.
Writing sometimes it gets me down. Not
mm-hmm.
not in a bad way necessarily,
uh-huh.
but it becomes a lot.
Yeah.
And music lightens me up.
Oh, good, good, good.
So I really want to get more involved with that too. Like start
yeah.
doing songwriting more.
Yeah.
And really getting stuff out into the world.
Oh, great.
That people can listen to.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think this one would be kind of a two-parter for you.
Okay.
So to someone out there who might be going through similar hardships as you did in your past, what would you say to them and where would you recommend that they start the healing process? So I want you to kind of speak on the anxiety part and also kind of like the acting part.
Okay. For the anxiety, I mean, the first thing I would say is embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
Have it. There are some Instagrammers and YouTubers that film themselves having panic attacks. I'm not saying you should do that, but it's just an example of people who are broadcasting to the world that this is a part of their life. This is something that is part of who they are. They might choose to put out a more positive side of things, but
mm-hmm.
the anxiety is there, so it shouldn't be hidden. I think that's the first step. As soon as you start to push it away, as soon as you start to try to smother it,
yeah,
it can come back out. And I know that from experience, that's for sure. And I'm not saying that it's easy to welcome it in,
yeah.
but as soon as I started being more okay with it, it became incorporated into my view of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
I guess part of it is the happiness through ignorance versus happiness through enlightenment.
Okay.
So there are people who are happy because they simply don't have anxiety.
Right.
I'm not saying they're ignorant, but I'm just saying that they are not aware of things that could make people anxious. Like, and as a person with anxiety, that's how I operate. I
mm-hmm.
think because I operate a certain way, I have this anxiety, and that
yeah.
people who are just simply happy don't see that way. But then there's the enlightenment section, which is, and I'm asking the listener to consider that if you can work with your anxiety, it might take years, who knows, you can begin to encapsulate it in your entire worldview,
mm-hmm.
and you will feel a more profound happiness about having welcomed it in and living with it.
Yeah.
The acting thing, which does bleed into it a bit, because that's one of those professions where if you have anxiety, it'll show right through. you know?
Yeah.
As I said before, you know, ask yourself if it's really something that you need to pursue as a career versus as a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of people who are simply happy being on stage or helping people out with their films, you know, being on camera every once in a while. And then there are people who say, this is how I want to make my living. This is how I want to have a career.
Yeah.
If people ask you what you do, will you say, I am an actor?
Right.
I just started saying that. I'm trying it out.
Yeah.
So I used to say, I'm trying to act.
Yeah.
I'm working at it.
Right.
But I'm just saying now, I'm bringing that energy in.
Yeah, great.
I'm an actor. I want to win an Oscar someday.
Yeah.
I want to be on SNL. I want the EGOT, everything.
Yeah, man.
What's wrong with saying it, you know?
Yeah,
what's
absolutely.
Wrong with saying it? The worst thing that's going to happen is that it won't come true.
Right.
Or that it will.
Yeah.
Right? So I say be brazenly ambitious if it's what you want. But if you choose to be ambitious, you should be smart. Just consider the business side of things.
Mm-hmm.
Consider the fact that you will probably have to think about your location and you will have
right.
to think about making a living.
Yeah.
And be okay with that. But anyway, be ambitious, but stay grounded.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Elijah, for taking time out of your day and coming over. And
it's so fun to be here in the place.
Yes, this is, in my studio.
The room where it happens.
Yes. Great of luck to you moving forward. I mean, I'm really excited to work alongside you one day, you know,
sure.
I mean, see you do great things. And it seems like you are really in a great headspace. And this new start for you, I mean, getting your own place, kind of starting this journey, being your own man right now, I think is something new and exciting for you. And I am so excited to see that happen for you.
Thank you.
Can you tell the listeners where we can find you?
Yes.
On social media.
You can find me on Instagram at Elijah Guo. Same with Twitter. And my website, ElijahGuo.com.
There you go. Cool. Okay, well, thank you so much again. And I will see you very soon. Bye, Elijah.
Bye.
All right, well, there's another episode of Choices. Thank you again for joining us, and I will talk to you guys next week. Okay, thanks, bye.